This shir is dedicated Le'ilui Nishmas Chaim Yesocho Ben Yechiel Dov Zeidel, our unforgettable friend Chaim Feigenbaum. He should be a meditzyosha for his wonderful family. The topic we will be discussing today is questions of Tumas Kehanim regarding the parsha of the week. We learned Tumas Meis in this week's parsha, Odom Kiyomis Ba'oyel. So it would be probably appropriate if we discuss various questions that are relevant today, primarily in the sugya of Tumas Kehanim. There is a prohibition, as we all know, for a Kohen to be Metama Atzmo Lemeis. And many questions arise regarding Tumas Kehanim. Can a Kohen learn medicine when he has to learn anatomy? Could he visit a hospital, primarily in Israel, when most of the ill and most of the deceased are Jewish? Many questions regarding Tumas Kehanim that we will be discussing in our short shiur today. So, usually when we deal with these questions, one of the most important sources is the Shittas HaRavid. Perek Hei, Halacha Tesvov, and Hilchas Nezidus, and once again in Hilchas Avelis, Perek Gimel, Halacha Zayin, the Ravid maintains that if a person is already Tmei Meis, there is no prohibition if he exposes himself to another deceased person, to another Meis, because he is Mechulal V'Oimid. Anyway, most of the Rishonim, many Poskim dispute this opinion, but the Ravid is definitely not a Shiti Yechidoi. Halachas Gedolos quoted in Shulte Geboirim in Hilchas Tuma. Many argue that that is also Shittas Rashi and Nozi Daf Nun Gimel, as the Lecha Mishnah says in Hilchas Nezidus. The Smag brings the shit in the name of Rabbeinu Tam, and the Chasam Sofer Tshuvas Yerodeis Ben Shni Lamedes already writes that he wonders why the Mishnah Lamelech in Perek Gimel of Hilchas Ovel says that this shit is a shit yichidui. The Noida Biyehuda in Dogul Mervova Yerodeis Ben Shni Beis at the beginning of his discussion is mitzaref the shit of the Ravid to a svek to be makel and certain circumstances, and then he retracts and he says that we cannot be makel on the basis of Shittas HaRavid, because even according to the Ravid there is no malchus, but there still is an isod dioraisa. An interesting anecdote is brought by the Chasam Sofer Tshuvas Yerodeis Ben Shni Lamedvov when he testifies that he was present when Rav Nosson Adler, the Rebbe of the Chasam Sofer, actually met the Noida Biyehuda, and this topic was the discussion between them, and Rav Nosson Adler expressed reservations about the psak of the Noida Biyehuda, and he was the one that commented to the Noida Biyehuda that even according to the Ravid there wouldn't be a malchus, but there definitely would be an issa d'oraisa. That was the reason that the Noida Biyehuda retracted, and he came to the conclusion that this cannot be used as a svek sveike to be makel, but nevertheless many achroinim understand Shittas HaRavid that it's, if a kohen already is Tmei Meis, then there would be no iser whatsoever, neither the Uraisa nor the Rabbonon, in being Nitma once again. That is the understanding of the Mishnah Melech. And also Rabbi Kiva Eger Tshuvis, Chelik Beisim, and Yud Ches. All in all, many Achroinim see the Shittas HaRavid and the shit of some other gedolim, which is similar to Shittas HaRavid, as a svek sveika, as a svek which is fitting to be part of a svek sveika lahokol. However, when a kohen actually was exposed to tumas meis, not in the past, but in the present, when it's tumah b'chiburin, most achroinim, and that is also the ruling of the Ramon, Semin Shin, Samach Tes, and Yeredeya, that everybody would agree in that case that there is no issu of Tumas Kohanim. And therefore, it is made clear in the Shulchan Aruch that Kohanim that are allowed and permitted to be Nitma Likroivehem, in that same time, a Kohen could also expose himself to the Tumah of other Mason. And therefore, a Kohen who is at the Ravaya of his relative, and he is entitled to be Nitma to his relative. In that case, he could go into the Beis HaChaim and expose himself to the tomb of other Mesim as well. The minig is to bury Kohanim in the row next to the entrance or to the exit of the Beis HaChaim, but that is just that the family should be able to visit the gravesite, visit the kever, and without having the problem of exposing themselves to Tumas Kohanim. But Bishas Delavai, when they are misasik be Tumas Kohanim, they are entitled to also expose themselves to the tomb of other Kohanim. Some 30 odd years ago, some Rabbonim came up with a big chiddush, with a marvelous idea that seems to solve the Tumas Kohanim problem. I say problem in brackets, as if it is a problem. And the idea is really a very unique one, and it goes like this. There is a concept, Cherev Harehu Kecholo, the basic source of this concept in the weekly parsha, Oy Bechalal Cherev, and Chazal Darshan, in Nozir, Nun Gimel Amid Beis, Bechalal Cherev, Cherev Harehu Kecholo. There are three different opinions in the Rishonim in the interpretation of this basic concept, Cherev Harehu Kecholol. Rabbeinu Bachya, in this week's parsha, in his commentary on the Torah, and also the Rash, Masechet Aholos, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Beis, in the name of Hari Simfont. They argue Cherev Harehu Kecholol is only the weapon with which a person was killed. If he was killed with a sword, that sword has the same tumah as a mace, which renders it Avi Avois Hatuma. So some Rishonim maintain that Kepashtein Dikro, Cherev Harehu Kecholol, when we're dealing with Chalal Cherev, a person that was killed by a weapon, that weapon has the same level of Tuma as the mess himself, Cherev Harehu Kecholol, and as Avi Avois Hatuma. And anybody that touches that Cherev also becomes an Av Hatuma. Most Rishonim, that is the Shit of Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, every clay matches, and it has nothing to do with whether the person died a natural death or was killed, whether that was the weapon, whether it's a weapon at all. Any clay matches that is an oil amaze or nogea amaze, harehu kecholol. The Rambam, Perekei Halacha Gimel of Hilchos Tumas Meis, argues any clay, not only matches, but anything that has a toiras clay. Well, if a cherev that was exposed to Tumas Meis becomes like a mace himself, the question is a Kohen prohibited of touching or being in an oil with that kli? That, once again, is a machlokes Rishonim. Tosfos Daf Nun Daled Amud Beis, in Masechet Nozio, brings it, Rabbeinu Tam maintained that im cherev harehu kecholol, then a mace has an iser of exposing himself to Tumas HaCherev, just the same as Tumas Mace. That is the shit of Rabbeinu Tam. However, Rabbeinu Chaim Kohen, one of the Balei HaTosfos, wrote a letter to Rabbeinu Tam, and he used a posik in Tanakh to express his feeling in an allegorical way, and he wrote, Ezo bayis asher tivnu li, quoting a posik in Yeshayahu. Is there any house in which a Kohen could enter? Because ein hu bayis she'ein sham meis, and there probably are various kelim in every house which were at some stage or another exposed to Tumas Meis, and therefore a Kohen couldn't get into any house. You know, if he paraphrases a posik, I would paraphrase a lesson of the Gemara. Loi henachtu bas la'avraham avinu is a posik that we find in various sources, and I say loi henachtu bayis la'avraham avinu. A Kohen could never go into a house. Anyway, Rabbeinu Chaim Kohen says, even though Cherev Harehu Kecholol, there is no prohibition of Tumas Kohanim. There is no Isur of Tumas Kohanim L'Cherev. That is also the opinion of the Rambam and Perek Gimel of Hilchos Nesidos. But what is even more important, that is the Psak Halacha. The Ramon Shin Samech Tesh writes that the Minig is L'Hokel, and a Kohen is not prohibited of exposing himself to Tumas HaCherev. Kach mavur gam b'chokhmas Adam yoredei simen kuf nun tes. So on one hand, there is no prohibition on a Kohen to expose himself to Tumas HaCherev. So maybe there would be an eitzah, a solution to the Tumas Kohanim dilemma. We take a ring, or a chain or a watch, anything that is a kli matris, expose it to Tumas Meis. You just have to bring it into a cemetery or oil hameis or on the mitzvah of a mace, and then a kohen could wear that watch because a kohen, there is no iser on Tumas Cherev, but the kohen immediately becomes an avatuma, and therefore he might not have any iser exposing himself to Tumas Meis because he's an avatuma anyway, and it is not an avatuma from the past, it is right now, right here and now in the present, because he is wearing the watch, which is an aviyavois hatuma. And if we accept this marvelous idea, then a kohen could even learn anatomy. He could be a chevel kedusha guy, not only visit a hospital. Many other gedolim rejected this idea. One of them is the Igros Moshe, Yoredeya Chelak Aleph Simen Reish Lamed Anaf Vav, discussing this notion, this svara at great length, that Moshe argues that Tumas Cherev, Areyu Kecholah, there is no Koros in Bias Mikdash. Tumas Meis, there is Koros in Bias Mikdash. And because in any aspect, in any way, Tumas Meis is Chomer Tfei, harsher than Tumas Cherev, to which the Kohen was already exposed, that would not be considered Mechul Al-Va'omid, and there would be a Tosefes Yisur for the Kohen exposing himself to Tumas Meis. My argument would be different, and I think more convincing. The concept of Mechul Al-Va'omid is only if the Kohen exposes himself to a Tuma to which he is prohibited. But if Tumas Cherev is Muta L'Chadchila L'Kohenim, it is extremely unreasonable that Tumas Cherev would render him Mechul Al-Va'omid to the extent that there would be no Isser by adding Tuma Al-Timosoy, because the first Tuma is Tumas Heter, and only the second one is Isser, and therefore I think the entire concept is probably based on a mistake and a misunderstanding of the basic definition of Mechul Al-Va'omid. Anyway, coming back to the basic questions we dealt with and we said we will be dealing with, could a Kohen learn medicine? And I've been asked this question many, many times. Many people across the board, from every shevet and for every walk of life, have the aspiration of being doctors, being nurses, of serving. And I was asked by many Kohanim, they want to learn medicine, but in the modern world you cannot be a doctor if you haven't learned anatomy. And learning anatomy, you need to dissect and deal with cadavers, with the bodies of the deceased. And even in Chutzlaretz, when we could assume that these bodies are from non-Jewish donors, in this week's parasha, Zoysatur Odom Kiyom Esboil, Atum Kriyom Odom, En Umesu Odom Kriyom Odom, and we learn in Yevamos Daf Samach Aleph, Kivrei Akum Eino Metame Boil, but Toysus and most Rishonim to maintain, they're not Metame Boil, but they are Metame B'mago, and therefore one cannot touch a cadaver, or a cadaver, I don't know how it's pronounced, without being Mekabel Tumas Meis, and therefore that would be a problem. The Noida B'Yehuda is the first that deals with a similar question. Noida B'Yehuda, Madura Tinyona, Yoredeya Simin Reish Yud, could a Kayan dissect the body, learning medicine, with the argument of Pikuach Nefesh? And the Noida B'Yehuda paskins that Pikuach Nefesh is relevant only when there's a Choyle Bifoneinu. Now the Chazanish makes it clear in Simen Reish Ches in Yoredeya that Chole Befaneinu doesn't really mean that the Chole has to be right here and now, but it has to be Koroiv, Dover Koroiv. A futuristic Pikuach Nefesh is not considered Pikuach Nefesh to override Isurim, definitely not Isurim Diuraisa. The comment of the Chazanish is a very relevant comment, especially in our days, because we live in a modern world in which space is no longer as crucial as it was in the past. And we know that in the area of transplants, sometimes a recipient, a heart recipient, is being prepared in America while the heart is still in Europe or in Asia, and everything is synchronized in a way that by the time the recipient will be ready to receive that heart, the heart will be here. So it is not really choyle b'foneinu, but if it's refua kroivo, then that would be considered choyle b'foneinu, and it would fit into the category of pikuach nefesh. However, learning anatomy now, because in another 5 years or 10 years or 15 years or 2 years, it doesn't matter, you gotta be a doctor and be oisik and tzelos nefoshes, that would not be considered pikuach nefesh to override the issa of tumas koyhanim. Visiting a hospital is a major problem in Israel or in an area like New York, in which a major part of the population is Jewish, because regarding the deceased of the non-Jewish population, Tumas Oil isn't relevant when we're dealing with non-Jews. Only Tumas Mage is, as I explained just a few moments ago. However, if we assume that many of the ill and the deceased are Jewish, that would be a problem. Because Tumas Oil, whenever a door is open, Tumas Oil is mispashit, you know, moves from one room to the other, and therefore, in most major hospitals, today the policy in hospitals is an open door policy. Being the Poisek of Shari Tzedek, I'm very well aware of this. Hospitals try to be user-friendly, friendly to people, and therefore usually all the doors of the rooms, of the machlakot, of the departments are usually wide open, besides operating rooms or other rooms in which people are actually getting treatment. So it is very common when a person passes away, Tumas Oil, in a split second, you know, spreads through the entire building until he is taken to the morgue to, you know, for... So, in Shari Tzedek, we have a notice when a person passes away in the hospital until he is taken to the morgue. There is a sign outside, Azora LeKoyhanim, warning for Koyhanim. But most hospitals don't have that service, and therefore, it is a major question whether a Koyhan could visit a hospital. Most of the police can say, if he has good reason to visit the hospital, to be makayim b'kecholim for a family member or to accompany his wife or for treatment, and he is in the hospital a relatively short while, yesh mokum lahokol, based on the concept of svek sveka, suffik whether there is a mace in the hospital at that given time, and various other svekas, especially according to the shita of the shach, that the tumas oil from one room to the other is only derabonon. So we could also argue it's a sveke derabonon, and it's a svek sveke bederabonon. So many poiskim are makel regarding visiting a hospital, but there's a problem for a kohen working in a hospital, because if he has to be in that building 8 hours every day, day after day, korav hadova levade, that probably he will be exposing himself to tumas meis. Now, one of the gedolim in previous generations that dealt with this question of a kohen visiting hospitals, the Churas Shai. Churas Shai was the Av Beis Din Siget. One of the outstanding responsa, the Shalas Achuvis, Chelak Aleph Siman Tov Kuf Nun Tes 559. He deals with this very question, whether a kohen could visit a hospital, and he is matya, he is lenient, on the basis of two svaros. First of all, every person has a cheskas chai. So we are halachically to assume that everybody is alive in the hospital and will be alive in the coming hour or two, mekoyach cheskas chayim. And even though we are aware that many times the deceased are in the hospital, and if there is any place where people usually pass away, it probably should be in a hospital. So he brings in other argument, Turei Zohar, in Siman Pei Dalet, Sif Kot Yud Zayin, regarding a totally different area in Halacha. If you have a certain dish, whether it's meat or fish or any other dish that was cooked, and we find three insects in that dish, the Taz differentiates between a situation in which we are afraid that the insects actually were in the fruits or vegetables that were cooked, and they were there in the first place because the fruit or the vegetable was infested with parasites, with worms. In that case it's also, but if they are like flies or ants that come from elsewhere, then there is no chazaka of gimel pa'amim. So the Chulashai has a very interesting analogy, and he says the same regarding Freemason. If the fact that you have Freemason in a building doesn't mean you have to be choshish for more, because osimi alma, it is not the nature of a hospital to kill people, and therefore it's just coincidence, and therefore regarding coincidence there is no chazaka of gimel pa'amim. That's the psak of the Taz regarding a dish in which we found three flies or three ants, and the analogy is from the Chulashai. Now, I personally reject both svaras. I don't think they are relevant. Cheskes Chai is relevant when we're dealing with a specific person, even though he might be gravely ill, but we still assume that he's alive because of Chazaka, Chazaka de Mikola. That's the concept of Cheskes Chai. However, when we're dealing with a hospital, not with an individual, then could Chazaka argue that there are no dead people in the hospital? Would Chazaka argue that there are no dead people in the morgue? Because every person has a Cheskes Chaim. Cheskes Chaim is when we're dealing with individual people, but when we're dealing with a hospital, I think that it all depends on our knowledge, our statistical knowledge, how many people pass away in this medical institution every day, how many hours of the day are there usually deceased people in the hospital. I don't think it has anything to do with our society. And that is actually the reason I also think it has nothing to do with the Taz. When we're dealing about a dish, and our question is this expected a natural phenomena or coincidence? Cheskas Gimel Pa'amim is not relevant by anything that is coincidental, but we're not dealing with Cheskas Gimel Pa'amim when we're dealing with Tumas Kohanim in hospitals. That has nothing to do with Gimel Pa'amim. We know that people, to our dismay, die in hospitals, and we know that it's quite common that people pass away in hospitals, and therefore I don't think it has anything to do neither with Cheskes Chaim nor with Cheskes Gimel Pa'amim. It all has to do with statistical knowledge. Should we assume that they usually are human bodies, deceased people in the hospital, and that would be a problem with Tumas Kohanim? Or could we be toiler that at any given moment maybe there are no deceased people in the hospital, definitely not in the rooms, and therefore we could be lenient? I think that is the basic question. Another relevant question regarding which I have a strong opinion, and I would be happy to discuss it today, is a very famous discussion regarding Shach Yoradei Shinayin quoting the Sefer HaRoikeach. The Sefer HaRoikeach writes that an Eishes Kohen, the wife of a Kohen that is pregnant, is entitled to go into an Oyel HaMeis, even though her baby, the fetus, might be a boy, and if it's a boy, then he's a Kohen, and there would be a problem of Tumas Kohanim. So the Sefer HaRoikeach writes, it's a Svek Sveke, Sofik Ben, Sofik Bas, and even if it is a boy, Sofik Nefel. Some pregnancies do not culminate with a healthy and living baby, and therefore Sufik Nefel, Sufik Bar Kiyuma, Sufik Ben, Sufik Bas, Svet Sveika, therefore she could expose herself to Tumas Meis. So some Achroinim and present day Gedolim argue, in our times when most of the pregnant women know what they have in their stomach, and if she knows based on an ultrasound examination that she has a boy, there no longer is a Svek Sveik, and therefore it would be a prohibition for her to visit the hospital. And that is the reason why many Gedolim in our time say that an Eishes Kohen that's pregnant should not visit the hospital. That is the psak based on the Sefer HaRoikeach. Now, even if I would agree to the basic approach, I would still argue, well, the hospital is not a vadei mace. In most cases, it is a suffix, and therefore, we still have a suffix vacant. Suffix nefel, suffix bar kiyuma, even though we don't have the second suffix, suffix ben, suffix bas, or we have a suffix whether at all there's a mace in the hospital. But besides this argument, I think there are other reasons why one could be maker. First of all, the shita of the rekeach is very, very interesting and problematic chiddush. And the Mugen Avraham is the first in Simen Shin Mem Gimel Siv Beis to quote the rekeach, quoting the shach. However, the Mugen Avraham argues that he doesn't know what the issue would be because we learn in the Holos Perek Zayin, Tuma Blua Eino Metama, Tahara Blua Eino Mekabel Tuma. When something is swallowed up, that is the lotion of Chazal, Balua, swallowed, it is within another body, then neither it's Metama nor Mekabel Tuma. For instance, if an animal swallowed a tool or a coin, and the animal went into oil or mace, or a person, then that coin or that tool would not be a makabel tuma. And if it is extracted from the person's body, from his belly in any way, then it is toil and not tuma. That is the concept of balua. So, tuma brua ina metamo, tahara brua ina makabel tuma. And what is more balua than a fetus in his mother's body? The second problem is that it is only when the child is born that he actually is a kohen. As long as he is in his mother's womb, he isn't even a kohen. He's considered a zar. And the third question would be, makoyach, which din would a fetus be makabel tuma? All hilchos tuma b'tahara are centered around three different concepts. A human being is makabel tuma, oichlin are makabel tuma, and kelim are makabel tuma. Well, a human fetus is definitely not oichlin, definitely not kelim. Is he considered a person? Perek Zayin Ma'ohalas, it is very clear that he is not a person. Lav nefeshu, so under what title would a fetus b'chlal be makabel tuma? Regarding question number one, balua eina mekabel tuma, I think the most valid approach is probably what we find in Tshuvas Adat Bas, Chelek Alaf Simen Reish, the same in She'ilas Yavetz, Rabbi Yankov Venden, Chelek Beis, Kufayin Zayin, and the same in Netiv Chaim, which is a commentary on Shulchan Aruch Chaim, primarily with the Mugen Avraham. These three Gedolim explain that the Rekeach actually is dealing with a woman towards the end of the ninth month of her pregnancy, and the reason she cannot visit Oyel HaMeis is because she might just suddenly, unprepared, have a baby, and that little Kayin would be, upon his birth, immediately exposed to Tumas Meis, and that is the prohibition. So the entire reasoning of this prohibition is the baby just might be born, and at the moment of his birth, he would be exposed to Tumas Meis. If this is the interpretation of the Shacham Sefer, I don't think it's relevant today for several reasons. First of all, today it is extremely uncommon that a woman suddenly has a baby. We live in a modern world, and this doesn't really happen. It's extremely uncommon. Women know when the baby is to be born. And even if they start feeling labor, they have enough time to leave the Oyel HaMeis. But the most important argument is, I mean, this lady, whoever she is and wherever she is, ultimately will have the baby in a hospital. Once upon a time, people had babies in their homes. And therefore, the halakha was that this child isn't supposed to be exposed to Miss Meis. He will probably be born at home. So she cannot visit Oyel HaMeis because she's exposing her little kohen to tumah. But this baby is going to be born in a hospital anyway. So what will happen if suddenly she'll need to have a baby? So she'll go to Machleket HaYeldot, to the department in which mothers have babies. So what is the problem? So according to this interpretation, there would be no prohibition whatsoever for a pregnant Ashes Kohen to visit the hospital. It is not the only interpretation, but I think it's the most reasonable one. The Avner Miluim, Ketzveis HaChoshim, in his Sefer Avner Miluim Siman Pei Beis, Sifchot Nalef, argues that a fetus would not be considered Timavlua, and he bases his argument on the Gemara Vedezor the Feinches. The Gemara says, Me'uberashin is Gairo, B'no Ein Sorech Tfile. If a pregnant non-Jewish woman was Nisgaya, converted to Judaism, to Yiddishkeit, then the fetus doesn't need tefillah because Haimer Revisei, his mother's body would not be considered a chetzitza because that is his natural state and therefore it's not a chetzitza. The Avner Miluim argues, if it's not a chetzitza, then it shouldn't be considered balua. I don't see what's the kesher. I think to the contrary, anything that is natural isn't a chetzitza. Chetzitza is something that is not natural. A chetzitza is something which is miutar, chitzoni. Haino Ravisei is a svora because this is his natural place, his natural home. As long as he is a fetus, the mother's body wouldn't be considered a chetzitza, but it definitely would be considered balua. I think if it's naturally balua, it is even more balua than something that is not natural. What does one svara have to do with the other? I'm also aware of the Prima Godem. The Prima Godem is mechadish to reconcile the Shach and the Rakeach. He argues that even Tahara Balua would be a Nisad Rabbonon, and if it's Tumid Rabbonon, that is why we rely on a questionable Svek Sveika. The Chasam Soifet Shuvas Yoradei Shim Nun Dalet rejects the Prima Godem and offers a different interpretation of the Sefer HaRakeach. But to make a long story short, I think the most reasonable pshat is that Adbaz, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, Netiv Chaim, that the entire chashash of the Rakeach and the Shach is she might just suddenly have a baby, be a LMS, and according to that interpretation, in our case, there would be no Isra. Well, many Achroinim maintain that the Mugen Avraham actually rejects the Shach, and he paskins that a pregnant Eishes Kohen could go into Oyel HaMeis. Chochmas Odom, Kuf Samach Sif Aleph, the Nesivis in his Sefer Derech HaChayim. So, number one, it's a suffix whether the Halach is in accordance to Shach and Sefer HaRokeach. It is also noteworthy that the Knesset Gdoyle, Shiori Knesset Gdoyle, writes that the minig that an Eishes Kohen should not go into Oyel HaMeis when she's pregnant is an ignorant minig, or a minig of ignorance. Minig Boirus, and in Constantina, we are not choishish to this minig, and Eishes Kohen does visit Oyel HaMeis. Then he brings the Rokeach, and he wonders what the shit of the Rokeach is based on. So the Knesset there is Matir. He testifies that in Constantina the minig is not to be choishish. On the other hand, the Birki Yosef goes to a great effort to be miyashiv shittas Rokeach, and he says one should be makbid. But nevertheless, according to the interpretation of the Radbaz, the She'ilas Yavetz, the reasoning of the Rokeach is in Shaykh Bizman Hazeh. The Balchon of Asaman and Koivet Shiurim, Chelik Bey, Simon Mem Aleph, has a very interesting discussion, and we will try to make it short. That Balchonan deals generally with the Isra of Tumas Koyanim. Is the Isra B'maisa Tuma or B'totza'ah? Is the prohibition at that specific moment when the Kohen exposes himself to Tumas Meis, or is the prohibition by the fact that the Kohen will be Tomei? And he wants to prove understanding number two, that even if there is no Issa B'Shas, Chaloisa Tumah, the outcome is what is really prohibited, and he proves this argument from the Rokeach, because he deals with the question, is it Uber B'Chalal Makabal Tumah? Is he B'Chalal a Kohen? So his interpretation is this: a fetus is not a Kohen. And therefore there is no Isser upon him to expose another to Tumas Kohen. But the problem is, when that baby will be born, he will immediately be a Kohen, and he is Tomei. So Rabbi Chanan doesn't deal with the question of Tahara Blua. He also doesn't deal with the question whether a fetus is Mekabel Tumah. He assumes that the fetus is Mekabel Tumah, however, he's not a Kohen. So there is no Issa. So his suggestion is this: Bishashu Mekabel Tumah Bemet Ein Isur, because he's not a Kohen. However, factually, he is Mekabel Tumah. The moment he is born, he is a Kohen. So what we have is a Kohen Tumah. And this proves that the Issa is for a Kohen to be Tumah, and not only to be Nitma. That's the Lamdashe approach of Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. In our case, once again, if he is right, it's irrelevant, because by hook or by crook, ultimately this baby will be born in a hospital, and he will be exposed to the same level of Tumah that he is being exposed right now, and therefore, L'cha'era, there should be no problem for an Aishas Kohen to visit the hospital. So, what I say actually is, I don't think an Aishas Kohen has to visit the hospital. Well, there definitely might be some room to be Machmir, but if it is important to her or to her family, I think an Aishas Kohen has enough reasoning, halachic reasoning, to visit the hospital if she needs to do so. I just want to make a very general comment regarding the Sefer Kech. The Kech writes that Aishas Kohen can visit Oyel HaMeis because of Svek Sveik. Many Yidolim assume if there is no Svek Sveik, there would be a prohibition, and then the Mogen Avraham asks, why? What would the prohibition be? We find in many passages in Bavli, just for example, Bavakama Kuvo Vamitbeis, Yavonis Menchesa Mitbeis, Choda Mitrevet Lastam and Nokat. We find a similar formulation in Yerushalmi, for instance, Nozichov Gimel Amadal, the Yerushalmi says, well, isn't it common that a person says one argument even if he has other arguments as well? What I mean to say is, maybe the Rekech would be Matir even if there wouldn't be a Svek Sveike. He just, says the most obvious reasoning, the most obvious Hefer. Why would one be Noyeg Yisrael if there's always a Svek Sveike? But maybe, in a case in which there is no Svek Sveike, which once upon a time it always was a Svek Sveike, but maybe the Rekech will also agree to the Svor of the Mogen Avraham, Tahara Blua, other Svoras. He just says that it's Bechlan al Shaila because it's always a Svek Sveike, and therefore I'm not totally convinced that one could prove from the Sefer Rekech that in a case in which we have no Svek Sveike, it would necessarily be an issue. So we have discussed a very interesting and relevant question. Not one question, but a variety of questions, all dealing with the basic concept of Tumas Meis and Tumas Kohanim. This week's parasha starts Zois Chukas HaToiro, even though we're dealing with the Chuk of Pora Adume. But the formulation of the posik is a very general and broad formulation. Chukas HaToiro, obviously Chukas HaPora, has something to say about Chukas HaToiro. The first Rashi in this week's parasha brings Lefisha Sotnu Umis Woyla Moinemes Yisrael Mamitz Vezu Vematam Yeshbo Lefichach Kosov Bochuko. And Rashi, in a few different sources in his Perush Al HaTorah regarding several mitzvahs, Chazio, Shatniz, Kilei Begodim, and Poradume, writes the same idea. What is the reasoning of these mitzvahs? Chukim chukakti gzeres guzarti v'yelech urushus lehara l'chareyem. I have a beautiful idea, a beautiful thought, which I quoted many times, and it is printed in Minchas Osher HaGodesh of Pesach, and also in Minchas Osher Sichas al HaTorah. In the Medrash we learn, David HaMelech says, Yehi libi somim bechukecho, chukas ha-Pesach v'chukos ha-Poro. What is the common denominator between Chukas HaPesach and Chukas HaPorah that David HaMelech davens and asks, Yehi Lidi Somen B'Chukecho, Chukas HaPesach and Chukas HaTorah? So my idea is, it is not because they have something in common, but rather because they are so, so different. Chukas HaPorah, Rashi brings, Enachu Rishus Lahara Racharein. You're not even entitled to think. You're not even allowed to think. Goes without saying that you don't ask any questions. Chukim Chukakti, Kzeres Gezarti, Ve'enachu Rishus Lahara Racharein. On the other hand, Chukas HaPesach, not only are you allowed to think, you should think and you should ask. Ask, ask, ask. Oikernes HaShulchon Machalkin Kaloyes V'Gaizim, we steal the Afikoymen. And this is all to encourage our children to ask questions. She'ein Yedei Lishol. Nebuch, a little kid, you know, everything is okay. He has no questions. And we force him to ask questions. Ask Psachloi. So, how do Jews act? Do they ask or don't they ask? Should they ask or shan't they ask? Chukas HaPorah, we say, Enach Roshus Laharer. Chukas HaPesach, Enach Roshut Lishtok. Ad Ptachloi. Four questions. Every Jewish kindler, every Jewish child must ask. So, in the Yishuv, in the way we reconcile Chukas HaPesach and Chukas HaPorah, that is the secret of the shleimus of a Jew. And that is what David HaMelech says, Yehi Libi Sonim Bechukecha, Chukas HaPesach and Chukas HaPorah. So, could I suggest some kind of a key to reconcile, to understand when Chukas HaPesach and when Chukas HaPorah? I think maybe a possible source would be the Akedah, the Parsha of the Akedah. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends a Malach Min HaShemayim and he says to Avraham, Al Tishlach Yadcho Al HaNa'ar, Avraham says, Achshav Afareish Sichosi. Mitchilu Amarta Li Kibi Yitzchak Yikor Al Chazera. Chakach Amarta Li Halai Shem Li Yoylo. Achshav Ata Omer Elai, Al Tishlach Yadcho Al HaNa'ar. My question is, why does Avraham wait till he has a number of questions? When HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, Halai Shem Li Yoylo, why doesn't he ask immediately? He didn't ask. They silently walked along. I think as long as they had a mission to accomplish, Avraham and Yitzchak understood this is not the time for questions. If you start asking questions, and questions might bring about doubt and spakus and who knows where the questions will end? Avraham Avinu heard a commandment from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Eis lasois veis lachshois. Shlomo HaMelech, the wisest of men, says, Eit lachshot ve'eit ledaber. There are times to be silent and times to talk. As long as Avraham Yitzchak had this mission to accomplish, they didn't want to think, they didn't want to ask questions. It is only when HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends an angel from above, and he says to Avraham Avinu, Al Tishlach Yadcho Al HaNa'ar, now is the time to understand. And Avraham wants to understand. Many other people would be so happy, Baruch Hashem, they would throw away the knife, kiss Yitzchak, run home. But Avraham says, no, Achshav Afarei Sichosi, I do wish to understand. And I want to understand the Havamin and not only the Maskana. I want to understand the entire story. How is it? Mitchil Amartili, Kiv Yitzchak Yikor Al Chazora, Chakach Amartili, Halai Shom Liyod, Avachshav Ata Omer, Al Tishlach Yadcho Al HaNa'ar. So as long as he had this mission to accomplish, that was the time for Chukas HaPorah. When the mission was over, mission accomplished, this is the time for Chukas HaPesach. Both are important. We just have to know when. When is the time for Chukas HaPorah and when is the time for Chukas HaPesach? בגמור שבת says בשור שהקדימו ישרו הנאסו לנשמה יודו סמך ריבוי מלאך ישורס והלבישו לכל אחד מישרו שני כסורים כסר אחד כנגד נאסה and additional כסר כנגד נשמה. And my question is, why שני כסורים? חזל דו נצא בשור שאומרו נאסה לנשמה אלא בשור שהקדימו נאסה לנשמה. So obviously the כסורים were for the הקדמה. There was only one הקדמה, so why two כסורים? My feeling is this. When a person says Nishma v'Nasa, Nishma means hearing, and Nasa means doing, because before you hear what you've got to do, you cannot perform. When one is Magdim Nasa l'Nishma, then it is not only the Nasa which is so holy and so sublime and so special, the Nishma also receives a different interpretation. When Nishma comes after Nasa, it is no longer interpreted as we will listen, we will hear, but we will try to understand. Nasa shalifnei Nishma is Chukas HaPorah. Nishma shalachar Nasa is Chukas HaPesach. Trying to appreciate, to understand, to reach greater depths of understanding Darkei Hashem and Tedes Hashem and the Mitzvahs and Kervas Elokim. And therefore, b'shor shekdim yisur nasa l'nishma, samach ribe malach ha'ashoras, each and every one of them got two ksorim. Echod keneged nasa, that is chukes ha'poro, ve'echod keneged nishma, which is chukes ha'pesach. Yirotzen, we should all be zoiche, to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu every moment of our lives, b'chukes ha'pesach hu b'chukes ha'poro, with siyata d'shmaya. Our service should be oyla l'rachamim u'l'rotzen l'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we should all be zeichet together b'koriv to hear kol shofar shel Moshiach Tzidkenu v'biyaz goyel tzedek u'b'binyan beis HaMikdash v'mheiro v'yomeinu amen.